Hello, and welcome to Introducing Me. I'm your host, Sarah. I started this podcast to get to know other people and lifestyles while discovering more about myself. Each episode, I'll give a new guest a chance to discuss their background, culture, interests, or whatever they want to talk about to help increase all of our own worldviews. Today, I would like to introduce you to Boots Knighton. Boots has been an educator since the late 90s, who is thriving after having open heart surgery in 2021. She loves skiing, mountain biking, and has a podcast, which focuses on open heart surgery and recovery. So I'm happy to have Boots here today to talk more about what's happened in her life, where she's at now, and her hopes for the future. So thank you so much, Boots. Why don't you go ahead and tell the audience more about yourself?
Thanks for having me, Sarah. Really fun to be here. I live in Victor, Idaho, which is on the border of Wyoming and Idaho. It's kind of it used to be a quiet eastern Idaho town, and now it's where a lot of us locals who used to live in Jackson, Wyoming have moved to because Jackson has become so expensive. But I love living here in Victor. I live right up against Teton Pass. For those who have had the privilege of traveling to the Tetons, I feel so lucky to live here. And it's been an incredible place for me to heal from heart surgery, which was crazy town. I've been an educator for a really long time. I have since left the classroom right before my heart surgery. I just knew I needed to leave education in the four-walled space that it was. And I started my podcast, The Heart Chamber, in last year, January of 2023, which is kind of my next phase of being an educator. And my podcast is basically the podcast I needed when I was facing open heart surgery.
Right. So why don't you take us through open heart surgery? How did that come up? What was it like? What does open heart surgery even entail for someone who might not be as experienced with it?
Yes. well, I was 42 when my heart made itself known that it needed help. I was at the peak of my athletic career. I was a ski instructor at Jackson Hole Mountain Resort. I was really on a very incredible trajectory there and was in the best shape of my life. And so in June of 2020, at the height of the pandemic, I started having all the heart attack symptoms, and it's a long and winding story. So I'll keep it to the cliff notes here, but ultimately I did get myself into the ER, even though it just made no sense at all. And they didn't find a heart attack, but they referred me to a cardiologist who then started doing a bunch of tests. And after about a month of tests and worsening symptoms, we discovered I had three different congenital heart defects. So, and none of them had anything to do with each other. One of them was a bicuspid aortic valve. And so that means, so your aorta should have three leaflets that open and close to allow blood flow. And mine only had two leaflets. And then another defect was undersized coronary arteries. So they are considered hypoplastic. And so undersized arteries means that there's not enough blood flow going to the heart. And the third one was myocardial bridging, which is where when we're forming in utero, our coronary arteries should be on top of the heart muscle. And mine had tunneled into the heart muscle and were being compressed with every heartbeat. And if you've ever played with a garden hose, if you want to like stop the flow of water, you just pinch the hose and it stops the flow of water. So every time my heart beat and the muscle clamped down on the arteries, it would stop the blood flow. And as we all know, if you do that to a garden hose too many times, it loses its pliability and it doesn't allow water to flow through as easily. And my arteries by age 42 were starting to give out. And what happens with arteries with myocardial bridging, they don't just give out slowly over time. Well, I mean, they kind of do, but then like you can go from being okay to really not okay very quickly. And there's actually been quite a few athletes who've had fatal heart attacks because of myocardial bridging. And so long story short, I eventually ended up at Stanford University Hospital out in California because they are the number one hospital in the world for myocardial bridging. And again, this was during the pandemic, December of 2020. And they did all the testing to make sure that, you know, open heart surgery would fix it. And what that would look like is actually opening my chest down the middle, breaking my rib cage, cutting it in half, cutting into the myocardium, which is the sac around the heart. And then they would cut away the heart muscle and bring the arteries up to the coronary arteries out of the heart, so they wouldn't be squeezed anymore. It's called an unroofing procedure. And so I was all set to go, and then the ICU filled up with COVID patients. So they had to cancel my surgery. And that was horrible because by then I was basically wheelchair bound. I had gone from, like I said, mountain biking early summer to not even being able to stand in my kitchen and wash dishes by December 2020. So I had to come home and find a different surgeon. There was very few in the United States at the time that could do this specific surgery. But I found a support group on Facebook, and it was on Facebook that I found a surgeon 5 hours from me. And 3 weeks later, I had the surgery.
Now, you brought us through all of the science technical stuff about your various congenital heart diseases and what the surgery was like. What was your knowledge of like how the heart works prior to all of this happening to you?
Great question. Oh, nothing to what it is now. I mean, there is some irony to this. I had been through wilderness first responder training twice. So I could understand, I knew the signs and symptoms of a heart attack. And so when I was having all those symptoms at the start, I actually talked myself out of it. I mean, I was like, there's just no way. This has to be stress. I mean, I had the pain down my left arm. I was nauseous. I couldn't breathe. I felt the elephant on my chest. I mean, all the classic verbiage you hear, like I've had the stabbing pain between my shoulder blades and my back. I mean, it was awful. It was awful. It was all the textbook symptoms. And I was like, there's just no way. There's just no way. It's COVID. And my mom had just been diagnosed with cancer and my car engine had blown up. Like it was like the dumpster fire of dumpster fires. And I just didn't want to believe it, but my husband drug me to the ER. And yeah, since then I mean, I'm still learning. The heart is such a complicated, incredible organ that is so necessary for our survival. And I get it that, you know, there are specific cardiologists for specific things with the heart. And I get it now because there are so many different things that can go wrong with the heart and so many things that can go right. And, you know, there's also the vascular specialists and then the respiratory specialists, but they all have to know about the heart because it all works together as a system. It's just mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing.
Yes, it definitely sounds like a lot. And to be going through that while everything else is going on, but then also like during COVID and having your surgery canceled, what were those moments like when you were able to find that support group on Facebook that you were like, my surgery's canceled and I don't know what's next?
Well, that group helped me, first of all, know I wasn't crazy, because I had been gaslighted by my local cardiologist, who had kept blowing me off, even though he had found all these defects. First of all, once all of them had been found on the heart CT, he didn't call me. He had his physician assistant call me and tell me. And that was so, what's the word? Unbelievable that he thought that that was okay. Like, life-changing diagnoses. Like, people who have a bicuspid aortic valve have to get yearly echocardiograms, because bicuspid valves can kill you. I mean, because what happens is they develop stenosis. You can develop an aneurysm in your aorta. It is a progressive congenital defect that does eventually need to be surgically corrected with either a pig valve or a mechanical valve. And so for him just to whimsically, have his nurse call me to tell me even that was a big deal. But then he had worked at Stanford prior to coming to our region. So he knew better. He had worked with the myocardial bridge cardiologists. He knew better. And he still insisted I only had anxiety. And here's the thing. I told him I was seeing a therapist and that I'd already been treated for anxiety and I was doing well, and that I knew this was not anxiety symptoms. And he still didn't take me seriously. So that was the first part. So when I had found this group and I read about all these other people's stories and their symptoms, I knew that this myocardial bridging thing needed to be corrected. I knew the bicuspid valve was okay. Like, I'd read all the values, like they measure everything. And I had to take myself to medical school online to be able to decipher my echocardiogram numbers and my CT. Like, it's important to read your own test results. And I've become really good at that now, and looking at images. Like, I'm still not a doctor. I mean, I'm educated. Like, I have a biology degree. My undergraduate degree is in biology and my master's is in education. Like, I know my way around how to find reliable sources. And so then to find this support group and to talk to other people, they were willing to talk with me on the phone, and they told me what they had to go through in order to get surgery. It was just incredible. Like, cardiologists were actually taught in medical school that myocardial bridging is not malignant. And thankfully that's now changing, but I was up against a cardiologist who, gaslighted me as a woman, who didn't believe me because of my athletic abilities and wouldn't take me seriously. So this one particular heart buddy of mine, I call her my heart buddy now, she had just, to go back to this Facebook group, she had just posted in the Facebook group that she had found the surgeon hiding in plain sight down in Salt Lake City, Utah. And so that's how I got connected with him. And it just was like, I went from thinking, after my surgery was canceled, I went from thinking I may not survive to, oh my gosh, I can make it 3 more weeks. And to have that hope and to be heard by a surgeon, it was everything in such a dark time in human history, which was the pandemic. It was a lot to manage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. And to hear, the gaslighting that you went through, just as awful, that is even a situation that has happened. But the fact that you were then able to find somebody else and so close by as well, and you only had to wait a few more weeks. So what then was the recovery period like from the open heart surgery and now, like, maintenance? Do you have to go back to the cardiologist that did your surgery, or is there somebody else local that's better than the first person you saw?
Yes. Yeah, since then, another cardiologist has joined the practice, and she actually used to work with my surgeon down in Salt Lake. and they have a wonderful working relationship. So she has met me with so much compassion. And unfortunately, so my recovery was expected. Like I had the normal sternal pain. But you know, it's interesting. The first 24 hours after my open heart surgery were pretty brutal. I was really sick from the anesthesia and I threw up 25 times. And throwing up 25 times post sternotomy is awful. And when I say sternotomy, what I mean by that is that's what they call the procedure of opening your chest to get to the heart. And so, but once I was past that, I was a whole new person because my heart was getting adequate blood supply. I walked from the ICU to the PCU and I could immediately tell I was going to live. And I didn't realize how compromised my heart was until it wasn't anymore. And I was getting the blood supply and it was just like, it was just like this whole new level of gratitude that I had survived. And so, you know, I came home in 4 days, which was also amazing. And I just saw the rest of my life ahead of me. Unfortunately, my mom died 9 weeks later and I'm the only child and she lived in South Carolina. And so she lived alone. And so that really complicated my recovery. Of course, you know, nothing in life happens on its own. Like I said, you know, my heart decided to make itself known during COVID and then my mom dies. And so it's just a lot to like manage. And, so I had to like clean out our house post-sternotomy and sell everything. And then unfortunately my body rejected all the sternal wires a couple of months later. And the sternal wires were actually wires pushed through my ribs to hold my rib cage back together after they had opened me up. And so I had to have those removed. So my entire incision down between my boobs had to be reopened and all those wires removed. And then I'm grieving my mom and it's summer by then. So I did the only thing I could think of, which is get a puppy. And so then all of a sudden we had 3 cats and 2 dogs. And so that made so much sense. And that was like the best thing we could have ever done. Like his name is Hamilton and he just really lit up our summer and continues to light up our lives every day. And it just gave me something to focus on besides the fact my mom had died 9 weeks after open heart surgery in the middle of COVID. And the recovery has been, I mean, when your arteries are trapped in the heart muscle for that long, it takes a long time for them to heal. And what I was not prepared for was how much I was going to change as a human being. So my heart was actually touched by a surgeon. And that just shifts your soul. And I'm still in my podcast, The Heart Chamber, I've been exploring this with heart patients who are willing. Not all heart patients are willing to go there with me, and that's okay and fine. I get it. But I've experienced such a shift soul-wise since my experience, and I'm still figuring out what all that means. It's been 3 years, and I'm still working out the meaning of all that and who I am in the world. And the world is changing rapidly too. So it's dizzying at times. But every heart patient I've talked to has reported the same experience, some more than others. Some haven't quite reintegrated since heart surgery. When I say reintegrated, what I mean by that is we disassociate when we go through really traumatic events. And I have interviewed heart patients who are still a year, 2-3 years out, they're still disassociated. And I get it. It is just such a traumatic thing. And for my heart surgery, my heart was stopped for 45 minutes, which is just a lot to wrap your head around. And there's just no way that that does not shift someone's consciousness.
Right. It's definitely a lot to have to take in and to experience and then like reconcile with afterwards. So the fact that, you know, you have come out on the other side and you are working through like kind of additional processing of, you know, kind of where you're at now and what you want to do and who you want to be. Now, you've mentioned the fact, you know, you were opened, you know, you have this scarring. Assuming you're willing to talk about it, you're open with your podcast and with other patients, like what is it like to have that scarring and for it to have been reopened for additional procedures?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was not a chest model before, so I don't expect to be one now. It doesn't faze me now at all. And by the way, I did have to have a third surgery. I left that out. The top of my breastbone didn't heal properly, so I had to have a titanium plate put in. So I have a titanium plate at the top, like just below my neck, holding my collarbones together. So the top of my scar, the top of my chest was cut 3 times in the same place. That was hard because scar tissue is painful. I'm still working through that. I'm working with a Rolfer. I'm working with another lady this coming week with another specific modality that breaks up scar tissue. I can't remember what it's called. So my sternum still doesn't move the way it's supposed to, which affects everything. It affects your breathing, how your heart beats, the whole nine. And so anatomically, I'm struggling. I still haven't gotten all my strength back. I work out in the gym. As an athlete, I believe in weightlifting, and you know, I'm still not bench pressing what I was beforehand, and not even remotely close. And that's just what it is. I mean, it's the price to pay for living. Like, I'd rather be alive than not, right? But yeah, for the first 2 years, I couldn't let sun hit my scar. So I had to completely, you know, change what I was wearing in the summertime. But now I don't even notice it. And my husband says he doesn't even notice it. It just has become this like background story of like what has made us who we are today in 2024 as we record this.
Right. Now, you were quite athletic. You know, you talked about being at the peak of athleticism for you prior to all of this mm-hmm. happening. And, you know, you're back in the gym making progress, hopefully, to maybe someday get back to there. What is it like now for you? Are you able to do, you know, kind of some of the more adventurous things, or is everything kind of at a little bit more of a toned back level?
Oh, it's toned back for sure. I had to buy an e-mountain bike for my mountain biking. I mean, I kept my I call it my acoustic mountain bike. but I hope to ride it again. But my heart just has been slow to like figure out this new life she and I are leading together. it's been a slow, steady process. And I have skied. I had planned to go back to teaching skiing this winter, but unfortunately I broke my leg in December. And so while skiing. And so I've been working on healing that. So that's been an unexpected detour. Tons of fun. Kidding. Totally kidding. Yeah, it's so apparently I'm getting like a PhD in health through experiential learning. What I'm joking with everybody. Everyone in my community is like, really? You broke your leg. Haven't you been through enough? But yeah. But to answer your question, once I'm past this leg thing, I plan on completely kicking ass.
Yeah, rightfully so. I mean, you had intention to be back as a ski instructor. Mm-hmm. Your leg just had different plans for you.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, I don't remember how exactly you said it, but do you think you would ever go back into like the physical classroom for teaching?
No, not with the state of education now. And I am so enjoying my podcast. I am speaking more also. I just spoke on the TEDx stage in November. That just came out recently on YouTube. My talk's title is Practicing Dying for Living. And I focus on the 5 minutes before my open heart surgery. And that was a huge moment for me. I just feel like I am still teaching, but just on a different field, right? And I've written a book. I have not published it yet. And then I'm working on a different book that I want actually to come out first before I publish this other book. I see me teaching in a completely different medium than the four-walled classroom.
Yeah. And it sounds, you know, all of your experience kind of brings you to that point to be educating in a, I feel like at this point, it's not even necessarily a non-traditional way, because people are getting educated through other mediums. It's just not that, you know, four-walled building, as kind of you just said. So what has this authoring process been like to say also that you have a book finished, but you want a different one to come out first?
So, like, what do you mean? Like, what has the process been like?
Yeah, so, like, kind of getting this first book done, but, you know, having a different story to be sharing first.
What, oh, gotcha. That? Yeah, so the first book, just real quickly about that, it was me processing my mom's death as I was fighting to live, because she died of heart failure. And it was for like completely other reasons. She was an alcoholic, and so that's what got her heart. So it was me processing my congenital defects in conjunction with her alcoholism that killed her. So no one needs to read that book first. I just don't need to be leading with that. But it's an important story to tell. And so I will, you know, allow people into that world when I am ready. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite ready to be that exposed. This first book I'm writing, it's basically a hug in formal and physical form of a book for heart patients. And I don't want to give away too much right now, but I do envision it being fitting in the palm of your hand as like, as a heart patient or anyone with a heart, just needing a hug in physical form, just inspiration for the heart from my heart. Yeah, I think we need more heart energy in the world right now, more than ever. The thing about my open heart surgery is it has opened my life up to wide open flow of feeling so much love and gratitude. And I just want to give it away.
Yeah, I think it makes sense how you're hoping to release these books and, you know, this the first written book to not be the first published book was, it sounds like, partially just an exercise for you to kind of get your feelings and your stories out there in a way of processing that, you know, maybe someday, yes, it will be out there for others. But, you know, as much as, you know, you're willing to be on podcasts, you're willing to talk, you have your own podcast, that doesn't necessarily mean every single detail of your life needs to all come out right at one point. So I think this book that you're, you know, currently working on and wanting to publish is a good foray into kind of like pushing something out, as, you know, you shared with your podcast, it being something that you needed, that you would have liked to have had when you were going through everything. So what was it like to even just start that podcast with that inspiration of, if I went back in time, I would have loved to have this? What was that beginning journey like for you?
Well, I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea what I was doing. And here's the other funny thing. I didn't listen to podcasts. But I knew I needed one for what I was going through, but it didn't exist. And so I had been interviewed. I'd been invited onto a local podcast for this. It's no longer running. It was for Jackson Hole. It was for Jackson Hole locals. And I had originally lived over in Jackson for a long time before I moved right over to Victor. Anyway, and I just loved being on the podcast. I was like, huh. And then I got to thinking about it and I was like, this is what I need to be doing. And so I reached out to the sound engineer for that podcast and asked him to be mine, because I knew I didn't want to like edit my own voice. And he said yes, and he helped me get started. And then it just has grown from there. And since then, you know, I've attended the World, you know, Podcast Movement, which is the largest podcast conference in the world. I ended up joining a network, and now I'm a part of a network of a bunch of badass women who have their own podcasts and are about like having these types of authentic conversations. And we are just helping each other grow and amplifying each other's voice. And we all have very different reasons and purposes for our podcast, but it's just been an incredible journey. And what has come from all of this is I'm just a better person. Like, I thought heart surgery was going to be my ultimate up leveling. And then it was time to like do podcasting and put myself out in the world and then do a TEDx talk and talk about up leveling. It's like, geez, like, when am I going to stop growing? Like, this, these growth edges keep, you know, forming. And then I break my leg and now I'm up leveling again. It's just like, I did have a conversation with the universe. After I broke my leg, I had come out of surgery and I was laying in my recovery room and I just had a rod rammed down my tibia to stabilize it. And I was like, okay, can I get a break? I've had enough. So, yeah.
Probably a good conversation to be having in that moment.
I was like, I've had enough.
Yeah, through all of this, you know, if, you know, kind of hit after hit that you have been through, how did COVID affect your family or your life past it was the original reason why you couldn't get your surgery?
We didn't have the real privilege of worrying about it. We had bigger fish to fry. Mm-hmm. I mean, my heart was going to kill me before COVID. And my mom's situation, you know, COVID was the least of her worries too. I mean, and at the time I was still teaching, I had to figure out how to teach online overnight, basically, like the rest of the educators in the United States. You know, I had more Q-tips shoved up my nose than I can shake a stick at, because, you know, I had to go through so much testing and and my husband the same thing. It added this background noise that was just so annoying. It was like this background noise of just constant nails on a chalkboard for anyone who might remember a chalkboard. I don't know if they still exist anymore, but like, yeah, I mean, it was, I have nothing but mean things to say about that virus.
I think that's, you know, a lot of people could say similar things, but to hear you, the reality of it, like you had other things going on. It was there. It's, you know, with everyone else, you had experiences with it. And I think that's why, you know, I do find myself asking about COVID of various people, because it affected everyone in very different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've talked to other heart patients who had heart surgery during COVID, and it made it for a very lonely process, because, you know, all my friends wanted to come see me before and after surgery, but they couldn't, because like the last thing I needed was a COVID cough after having my chest cut open. And eventually I was so starving for like visitors. I mean, my husband's great, but like I wanted to see my friends. And so I would just say, just wear a mask and, or I'll meet you outside. But of course I have to have surgery in winter, and I live in the Tetons, and it's like snowing. And anyway, it was, yeah, the whole thing was just so annoying. And I feel like that doesn't even, annoying is not the right word, but today I'm annoyed by the whole, when I think about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
But I also like, I've learned to polish turds. And what I mean by that, it's like, here is this terrible thing, and look at all the good that has come from it, right? Like it, and I know people died, and I know people are still struggling with post-COVID symptoms. Like I don't say that flippantly, that like, oh, good thing COVID happened. No. But if we have to be willing to look at the duality of all things. And what I mean by duality is there's always two or more sides to everything, two or more things, that outcomes to a situation. And like, I wouldn't trade my heart surgery for anything. What it has done for me and my life and the perspective it's brought me, you can't get that from any other life experience. Maybe cancer, maybe another fatal situation. But with COVID, like it really opened up the world in ways, like it closed the world down, but it also opened the world up in other ways. Getting online, connecting around the globe, like I don't think we still are through it all. And I don't think as a humanity, we have had enough time and distance from it to truly realize the impact COVID has had on the world.
Yeah, I think, you know, realizing that, vocalizing it is important, because it's not, you know, it wasn't just a short period that we're now, you know, a decade away from. You know, it was a long time, you know, as you shared, you know, there are still people going through and a lot of things and having to deal with repercussions and all of that. And it is still in the recent past. I think, you know, COVID has probably messed with all of our senses of time a little bit when trying to think of when something was, or, you know, what was happening at, you know, a certain period of time. But it's now, you know, there's before and there's after, and there's the before can't ever, you know, kind of come back in the same sort of ways because of all of our experiences and how we've been affected.
Yeah. It's like, you know, think of another time in history where our lives changed so dramatically, would be 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So it's definitely life-changing, and for you to have your own life-changing moment within that you're, you know, still processing and helping others and, you know, making connections with your podcast, you know, you've found, you know, you're expanding your network, you're sharing more stories. Do you find that you are reaching people like you were, like, kind of when with your first diagnosis?
Yeah. And, you know, the great question. I just got an email from a listener this week who has been through several other tragedies in her life, and she has a bicuspid valve, and it does need to be replaced, and it's going to be replaced in a couple of weeks. And she said, I did this for the whole month of February, which is heart month. I did solo episodes. Just, I've told my story on my podcast in many different ways. But this was like a whole different way because it had been 3 years. And so I decided to reflect on it now that I've had 3 years, you know, of healing. And she found it to be so helpful that she listened to each of those episodes 3 times, she said. And she said it helped her to feel less alone. And that was my why right there. I was like, if this is everything. And I've heard from other listeners, but I was like, I'm satisfied. Like, I've helped this one lady. And I mean, I've helped many people from the feedback I've gotten. But I was just, it was just the most heartfelt email I've probably ever received. And to know that there's one person out there who feels a little less alone, I've done my job. But I do, I'm not going to just stop there. You know, I plan on doing this for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome to hear and to, you know, kind of get that right then and there to hear, you know, it is something in podcasting where, you know, episodes can get buried. So, you know, if you shared your story kind of early on, you know, people are hearing, you know, well, what was recently shared? What were their stories like? Are those other people who've been through similar things, or are they, you know, medical practitioners? So I think it's cool that, you know, you took Heart Month as a chance to do that and clearly made an impact. Now, before I start to wrap things up, is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners today?
Yeah. Your health, your body is your greatest asset. Treat it that way. When you go get an oil change, what can you do for your body? Get a massage, get a colonic, IV nutrients. Like, we treat our cars better than we treat our bodies in this American society. And you don't realize how important health is until it's taken away.
Yes, that's a great message to share, as from someone who's experienced quite a bit, but also just important for everyone to hear. So I'm grateful for you sharing that here. At the end of all my episodes, I do ask my guests a random question. So my question for you today is, what job would you be terrible at?
Oh, well, I've already done it. That's waitressing. Terrible at that job. And I don't think I could be a vet. I think my heart would just be broken all day long. I don't think I could do it. My cat or dog gets a sniffle and I'm like falling apart. So pretty sure I could not handle, you know, all the things that a vet deals with.
All right, that brings this episode to a close. So, of course, if you would like to connect with Boots and her podcast website will be in the description. That is the Heart Chamber Podcast. So it, of course, is wherever you listen to your podcast, wherever you're listening to this, I'm sure you can find her podcast as well. And social media links will also be in the description for Boots, both her personal and podcast Instagrams. She's also on Facebook and LinkedIn. So if you'd like to connect with her in either of those places, those links will be there. And of course, if you would like to connect with our podcast website is in the description. It brings you to all of our episodes, all of our social media. We are on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. So feel free to go like those pages. That support is always appreciated. If you'd like to support the podcast monetarily, there is a link to do that as well. And if you have a story that you would like to share on this podcast, my email is in the description. It is always the best way to reach me. So thank you so much, Boots, for spending time with me today, and to my listeners for taking the time out of your day to hear a new story. Until next time, bye.
Thank you so much for having me.